Hello, my friends. I am so excited and so grateful to be speaking all over the world this year. You can find the dates on moderncto.io. The topic of the talk is the habits and patterns of the greatest technology leaders on earth. So I'm headed out to Williams-Sonoma in California, Trimble and Boulder CU in Colorado, and the Tennessee Tech Council. If you want to follow me on this adventure, we have a vlog and it's done really well by Alex, our director of video. So to follow this vlog, add me on LinkedIn or follow us on YouTube at ModernCTO. Today we are talking to RVP, the Vice President of Engineering at Thumbtack, and we discuss advice to CTOs experiencing hypergrowth, tips on delivering critical feedback, and the importance of setting goals and having a vision for the future. All of this right here, right now on the Modern CTO Podcast.
Here we go.
This is the Modern CTO Podcast.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's a wonderful day. It's beautiful here. We're down in Florida. Where are you at?
We are in San Francisco. So it's a little bit cloudy and colder than Florida, I'm sure. But
San Francisco is always cold. Even in the summer, it's cold.
Yeah, it's the same weather throughout the year. There's almost no seasons here. So
I've got to ask, how do I pronounce your first name?
I go by RVP. So my name is Raghavendra. But I've gone by RVP since like undergrad. So that's what I usually go by.
RVP?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that your initials?
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
that's pretty cool. Yeah. RVP is actually, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay, I'll call you RVP.
Sure, yeah.
All right, so it's early for you right now. You just get to work?
Yeah, I usually get into work around 8:45. I have a commute, so I commute from about 1 hour away from here, so I take a train. So I try to get in early and then try to leave early so I can spend some time with my family in the evening.
Yeah, I saw you have a daughter, it says.
Yeah, I have a three-year-old.
I have a 16-month-old daughter.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. I thought I saw that in your LinkedIn profile photo. So.
Oh, yeah, she's amazing.
Much smaller then, right? Yeah, but.
Is that your only kid?
Yeah, that's my only kid.
It's just, you know, it's hard is right now she's like, as I'm leaving in the morning, she runs to the door and like doesn't want me to leave and like yells, did yours ever do that?
Yeah. Well, nowadays I leave early enough that she's not up yet. So My wife's doing the drop off in the morning, but I get to spend time with her in the evenings before she goes to bed. So I'm home by about 6:30 or so, 6:45, and then I get like a good 2 hours. She's having dinner in the middle, just hang out a little bit, talk about her day. There's some photos from her preschool. I mean, she doesn't remember her day at this point. She's like, I did the same thing. But then we look over those photos, and that sort of jogs her memory. And then we talk about what she did, which is always fun.
Yeah, one of my friends, his daughter is, I think, 5 or 6, and the preschool she goes to has cameras everywhere, and it has the vision system, so it tracks her and tags her. So no matter where he is, he can pull up his camera and see where she's at in school, and it sends updates. You can set it up to send updates, so it's like constantly watching. I was like, that's totally different than how my school was.
That's amazing. Yeah, this one is not that fancy. It's like more like one of the preschool teachers takes a few photos during the day, like things that she does and stuff like that. And they send a small note, hey, this is what your daughter did today. And it's fun to see that. But that sounds fancy.
Right?
Having that like continuous monitoring, like just check whenever you want to, right? But
yeah, I'm used to seeing the videos on social media or something where it's got the AI detection rectangle around the object, but you're not used to seeing that like in a preschool classroom.
That's pretty fancy. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, so how did you fall in love with technology? What was your earliest memory with technology?
So that's the interesting thing. Yeah, I mean, I think I always wanted to do something with computers and computer science since like middle school or elementary school or something like that. Like I remember my, and this was like growing up in the 80s, like 90s, right? Like I remember my dad was into like sort of computer parts and supply at the time. Like he's done different things in his career, like, but he's an engineer, like sort of an electrical engineer by training. And so he got me one of these, I forgot which one it was, but like I did like basic programming, like in fourth grade or something like that. And that was when I really got into it. And like very early on, like someone asked me what I wanted to do. Like I was pretty sure I wanted to be in computer science, which I think turned out well, because like this was sort of an area which as I was growing up was booming. There was so many opportunities, so many cool things to do. And that's sort of how I went into it.
Dude, my father, electrical engineer too. And he had this, and one of my earlier memories is he's had this cheese board, you know, and he was so pumped because he had gone to Radio Shack and he had one of those cases that has all the little tiny drawers on it so you can have all your little electronics in it.
I see.
And he's like, check it out, we got LEDs. Like he was like really pumped about LEDs.
Yeah.
Oh, they come in different colors and like they're amazing now. And so he was showing me how to take the LED with the cheese board and like actually get it to light up and do something. And
that's awesome. Yeah. I was looking at the toys that you get these days. There's some pretty fancy toys, right? Like I sometimes like look at Amazon, like what are some toys I can get for my daughter? And then like there's some of this like electrical circuit thing, which sounded good. It was more like for 8+ year olds. Maybe I can get that and start sort of looking at it myself. And then like at some point my daughter might engage with it. But it's so fancy what the types of things you have access to these days.
I know. It's like the Arduinos are like $60 or something.
Right.
Or the Raspberry Pis. That did not exist when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like it wasn't even close. I mean, I'm about 31. I don't know how old you are, but yeah, about 31. Okay. Yeah. So we're not like too far off, because right when like computers started, like I was rare to have a computer. Like, not like none of the kids around had the computers. It wasn't until about like middle school, but I started real young because it was just my dad had to have it for work. But
yeah, and it was even rarer when I grew up in India in Bangalore. So Bangalore is now sort of known as this sort of IT hub and so on in India, but it wasn't then, right? Like most of that was like sort of in the 90s to late 90s. Like that's when a lot of those IT companies in Bangalore started up. But my dad was into this like earlier than most, and that's why I sort of got into it. And then of course, like video games and all of that. But,
of course, you gotta have some Call of Duty type stuff.
Yeah.
How do you go from some basic programming to, you know, VP of engineering technologist at Thumbtack?
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, so I was always into computer science. So then I started, I did my undergrad in computer science in Bangalore, actually near Bangalore. And then I came to the US like 2002 or something. And then I studied computer science at sort of University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And then my first job was at Microsoft. So I kind of started at larger companies. So I was at Microsoft for a few years and then Google for a few years. And I started in like sort of developer tools, compilers, that sort of thing. But then I got super interested in search. So the next many years of my career were in search. And so this was Bing, except that it wasn't, so like basically Bing starting up, right? It wasn't even called Bing. It was called back then MSN Search, because MSN was a big brand at the time. And that was called Live Search or something. But this was basically the first 25 engineers or so at what is now called Bing, where we were like, hey, search is big, Google's doing great, let's do something here. And it is this sort of high energy moment, like let's go build a search engine, it's like let's beat Google at their game. And then like I was doing that for a few years, and it was fun. Like it was kind of like a startup within Microsoft. So I was used to the sort of the more traditional Microsoft for the first couple of years, and then I got into this, so like whole different world, like it's a small environment. Like we felt like we could do whatever we wanted, build out a whole stack from the ground up, and given a lot of freedom and a lot of resources. And so that was fun. We essentially built sort of pieces of search engine from the ground up. So I was working on sort of index serving, like how do we build the index, search engine index, and then how do we sell that to millions of users and all of that. But eventually at some point I decided, actually, I think I'd love to do this at Google. and And so I came to the San Francisco area, the Bay Area, and I was at Google for a few years working on the crawler. And that was a lot of fun, like technically super interesting. Like working on the crawler at Google felt great at the time. Like, hey, like this is sort of the biggest crawler out there. We are working on sort of the cutting edge problems in web crawling. And it was fun and I learned a lot and got to work with some really good people. But at some point, I think you start to think of in large companies sometimes, like, what's my impact on the company, right? Like how can you do that? And then I was looking for going into something earlier stage. And this was like, I think 2010 or 2011 or something like that. And that's when I moved to Twitter. And Twitter was not a small startup. It felt to me like a small startup because I came from these large companies, like large public companies. And Twitter was at the time, like, I think 80 or so engineers or 670 or something like that. It was not small, but for me, it was a pretty big change, but it was a lot of fun. Like, and so I did started by doing search at Twitter. So that was my background. And then at some point I moved to storage system, like how do we store data and so on, because that's sort of where at the time Twitter's problems were. Like the hardest problems at Twitter was like managing scale. I don't know if you remember the fail whale and some of these things. Like Twitter saw this huge rapid growth very early on, like multiple percent week over week, month over month. And the systems were not keeping up, right? Like, and so some of us who are working on other problems on Twitter are like, hey, like, let's go work on just scaling the site. And so sort of got into infrastructure and sort of backend systems, distributed systems, that sort of stuff. And did that for a few years, then went to Pinterest. And that's sort of when I got into management, leading teams. And eventually I was leading all of the sort of backend systems teams, like what we call infrastructure at Pinterest. And then I got to Thumbtack, where I shifted into working on consumer product experiences type of stuff, still within engineering, but with a focus on more the product side of things than infrastructure, and onward to where I am now.
If I go on Thumbtack's website and use your search, it'll be like incredibly fast, right?
That's what we hope it to be. It's we are never satisfied with how good it is. Like, we always want to make it faster. Like, in fact, like, have some initiatives right now to like make it faster and like more relevant and so on. In some ways, Thumbtack is a search engine, but really oriented towards finding you the right professional for what you want, right? So Google's job as a search engine is to go very broad and give you a lot of tools to research. We actually want to solve a different problem. Like, we want to find that right match for you, right? Like, this is the hardest problem. And this is ultimately what Thumbtack's trying to solve. Is like, so hard to find that right plumber or gardener for you, right? Like, for what you want. It's not that you don't have access to a lot of tools that give you like, hey, here's like 100 different plumbers in your area. Like, there's all these tools that give you that, but it's hard to narrow down to like, hey, like price point, the fit for me. And in some categories, it's the fit matters more than others. Like a photographer, you want someone like maybe like fits your style. Like, whereas some other categories you're looking for like price point, all of these things, but you want to narrow that down. And so it's interesting. Like, our problem is to narrow that, help you narrow down into that exact right pro that you want to hire for a particular job. It's more similar to, I think, like an Airbnb or like a flight search, or finding that right place to stay when you travel, like finding that right flight that you want to take when traveling somewhere, rather than the broader retrieval problem that the search engines have. Right?
You make a fantastic point, especially with creative collaboration. So at our company, we have videographers and audio producers. And so we have this creative collaboration aspect to it. So when you talk about finding the right photographer for you, the human plays like a big role. And when you open up a directory or a Google search and you get all these results of phone numbers, photographers, that doesn't tell you who is going, like who they are.
And that's what sort of, that's what I think has made hiring a professional to do a job for you just particularly hard. Like, so hard that, like, as a homeowner, for example, like, you have a never-ending to-do list, which I feel like is a challenge as a homeowner, but good for Thumbtack.
Yeah.
You have this sort of never, like, you fix one problem, you have one more problem, but like, you usually that stays on your to-do list, because unless you want to do it yourself, in which case some things you can do yourself, but other things are harder. And but it's so hard. Like, it takes so much time to do that research. And so Thumbtack started with that premise, and then we evolved our product even over the last 2 years to essentially try to give you a search-oriented experience, an interactive search experience, which turns out like a lot of things that you do online are end up being interactive searches, like buying a product on Amazon. You usually start with a search query and you see a bunch of options, you filter, you say, hey, like I'd like 4-star and above, or like this price range, and then you narrow down to what you want, and then you buy. And that's sort of our vision for where Thumbtack can go. Like today you can't quite book that pro, but we're getting really close, and that's our goal. Like you should be like within minutes, find someone that you really like, see all the information, and this you can do today. Like find the information you want, like reviews, past work, past projects, photos, give you all access to that. Give you a price, it's super key. And you can't do that in all categories, like home remodel and so on. Like we can't give you a price, but in many things you can, like house cleaning, like all of these things, we can give you a price. And once you have those, then you have like, okay, like I've narrowed down to like these 3 or 4 people. Let me contact them, see what works best and schedule and move on. And so when it works well, it's really powerful. Like, I mean, I take a train ride home and I'm like, hey, like I need to hire someone this weekend. And then sometimes like you find that right person, you hear back, and then that's magic, right? Like our goal is to make that really consistent, and yeah, a long way to go to like really deliver that experience in a consistent way, works all the time, works across all the 1,000 categories that Thumbtack has.
Well, I love the brand and the interface. The experience feels open and clean and easy to navigate the information. So I always like to give shout outs to the branding and design teams when they do really good jobs. You know, I'm just like I'm a sucker for good design. When I see good design, it allows the company to make more mistakes. Like with other things, because it's just, you can win my heart with good user interface.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing I always wonder, right? Like the design seems like magic to me as an engineer. Like that's the one area where like, wow, like this is magic. Like, I mean, you think of a product that you want to build, and Thumbtack operates in a very cross-functional way, right? Like designers, product managers, engineers are all sort of involved in every step of the product building process. And so we think of like, hey, this, we would like to build this. And then you hand it over to a designer and then you get their designs back. Like it's like magic. Like, wow, like how did that happen? Like that's sort of exactly what I wanted, but I didn't know that's what I wanted. And you're right. Like it's a nice craft, and like working with really good designers, like is such a great experience.
You made all of these transitions from, you know, different levels of your career through engineering into leadership and even farther into leadership, right? What are some of the lessons that stand out to you, you know, value that you can bring to the audience? Let's pretend that, you know, we have some engineering individual contributors and they're looking to level up and become a first-time leader. What advice would you give to them? I'm sure you have those types of people at your company. I think you have over 150 in engineering, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what if they sit you down, right? And they ask you for your personal advice about how to take that next step. What do you tell them?
That's a good question. So the first thing I'd say is, I think leadership has different sort of forms of leadership. Like one thing I like to tell people is sometimes people have a view of what leadership means, right? Like it's about management, managing larger teams and going down that path. But actually in tech, there's different forms of leadership, right? Like you can lead by being really good at your craft, like really, really good at engineering and sort of have this broad influence without going down the management path, because the management path has some things that I think like engineers don't realize. I'm just like, people management is sort of a large part of your time. And as a manager is spent thinking about people and organizations and so on, right? Like, so first of all, I think like people have to figure out how they want to develop. Do you want to develop by being a sort of an architect or principal engineer, or do you want to go down a manager path, right? Like, and there's flavors of sort of where you can combine the two. It's technical, tech lead type of roles where you can and do that. And honestly, I mean, I think like, one thing I like to talk about is like, where do you want to be in about 5 years? Like, and start to think about what opportunities you can take to do that. And it doesn't always work out the way you plan, but I think it still helps to think that way. Like, for example, when I started off my career, for the first few years of my career, I was sure I would never want to go be a manager, right? Like I was sure, I was convinced, like, this is not for me. Like I really enjoy building stuff. And I pushed aside any opportunities to move into management. In fact, part of the reason that I moved to Google was at the time in Microsoft, it felt like the easiest path to grow in your career is to go down the manager path. And I didn't want to do that. And Google was famously known at the time for like, this was sort of like 2007 Google, right? Like it was a place where there were very few managers. It was super flat. Like you had 100 people reporting to one person and all of that. Like, so a very technical organization. And things have evolved and like that model doesn't quite work. Scale and so on, and things have evolved. But like as an engineer who wanted to be technical, that felt like, well, this is what I want to do. But at some point, I found through, actually, this was when I was at Twitter, I took on a tech lead type of position where I realized that like I can have higher impact by guiding other engineers than trying to do everything myself, right? Like, because there's only so many hours in the day, there's only so much that you can get done yourself. And at some point, you realize like, I can guide other people, and it's so rewarding when that goes well, right? Like you see someone coming fresh out of school, a lot of potential, and then you help guide them to grow and have impact. Then I started to realize, wow, like this is super rewarding, and I'd like to like take this on and like be good at it. And that's how sort of I got into management. So that's what I would say is like being open to possibilities that come up. I mean, you have a 5-year plan on where you want to go, but your career tends to take you in different ways depending on what comes up. And to be open to that and be open to taking on sort of what I would call, this is what I tell every engineer, like take on that stretch challenge, right? Like especially to people who are doing really well, take on that thing which you think you cannot do. Like just sort of like, oh, like that's hard. Like, I don't know if I can do that, right? Like that's the type of thing you want to take on. Every so often you want to make sure that you're feeling stretched and growing. That's the best way to grow is like, taking on something which is just seems out of reach, like both to you and your manager. I don't know if I'm ready for that. But yeah, like let's take it on and try it out. Because more often than not, like really good performers, like they lean in and they grow through that process. And then you take on the next challenge and so on. And that usually leads to growth in whichever direction that works for you.
Now, do you do like roundtables or workshops? Like how do you engage with your engineers?
Mostly through one-on-one conversations. So, I mean, we are at the phase, I mean, like 150 odd people that I think it still works to do a lot of things one-on-one. So I obviously spend a lot of time with people that report to me, but I also have like a 2 or 3 hour block each week where I'm just meeting people from the broader engineering team, either folks that have expressed an interest in meeting me, or I feel like, oh, like I'd like to catch up with these folks. And so that's how we do roundtables and other things. So we have sort of a mentorship program at Thumbtack where anyone can sign up to be a mentor and anyone can sign up to be a mentee, and then we pair them. So that works actually beyond engineering. And we have sponsorship programs that we're working on for sort of high potential leaders, sort of emerging leaders who are on a good path to get to sort of an executive level, a director and above position. So we have a few different forms of this, but I like to spend a lot of time one-on-one with engineers from across the organization. And this is what I sort of talk about, like, are you feeling engaged? Are you growing? And we do things to make sure people are growing. And sometimes it comes at a short-term cost to the company. Like, for example, like, let's say you take a really good front-end engineer who is one of our best, right? Like, doing super well, has done that for the last 2 years or 3 years. But you can sense that person's like feeling bored or like not quite feeling bored, but you see that like, oh, like this person is really good at their craft. So like, what more can they do, right? Like, and sometimes the right option for something like that is like a change of pace. Like we had one of our front-end engineers a few months back move into like iOS development, right? Like that's a new area for them. And yes, there's a short-term cost to the team. Like, hey, like we just sort of, one of our best front-end engineers now sort of an emerging, sort of a learning iOS engineer. But in the long run, it works out because in a few months, like that person ramps up and then so they are happy and the team's happy. And then, so sometimes we do that, like people move from engineering into data science. So we encourage movement and even like between teams at Thumbtack. That's one way to grow. The other way to grow is in taking on different roles and new challenges.
You mentioned that there was a higher level manager program. Yeah. Type thing that you just mentioned. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? I'm interested in that.
Yeah, this is something we are just starting to pilot this quarter, but it's actually focused on sort of some, it started off focused on diversity and inclusion initiatives. So how can we sponsor underrepresented sort of areas and women leaders and so on to get those opportunities and get mentorship to grow into leadership so that we can continue to make our leadership team more diverse. So we have sort of a leadership team, and then we have an extended leadership team, which is all our directors and above. And we're always looking at sort of ways where we can build diversity into that. So started off with that in mind, where goal is to identify a few folks who are on sort of that edge of leadership, and then have someone on the leadership team be a sponsor for them, which is more like a mentor, but also someone who's more closely associated, is aware of your work and proactively helping you grow, rather than sort of a mentorship, which is more about like bouncing ideas and spending time.
Is it a program? Do they like actually do like a structured thing, or is it just sort of like it's like formally informal, like where I have a mentor or I have an individual and then they sponsor my work, we engage around, or do they have sort of like a structured way that they?
So we are figuring that some of those details out now, but this one will probably be essentially work like mentorship, but also have a proactive component. So that's why we're using the word sponsor rather than mentor. The idea is that the sponsor is also proactively looking at like, hey, what are some ways that this person can have an opportunity outside of their area of work, right? Like one of our senior leaders is sort of our director of IT. And one of the things I was working with her on is like, here are some ways you can have an impact on the rest of the organization, right? Like, I mean, obviously she's really good at IT and she's grown in that area. She has more knowledge than me or anyone else. And she's a great leader there. But there are some ways you can have influence and work on projects sort of across the company, which I'm usually about culture, company building, other types of things. It's really about finding those types of opportunities and presenting them to emerging leaders. And we're starting with sort of this diversity lens, but over time it could evolve into a much broader program.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind all my probing. It's just you guys have like the Fortune best places to work in technology, the Fortune best places to, like, you're all like all the publicity about you guys, such a great place to work. So I'm like hype whenever I, you know, not the top 1% of companies are the top 1% because they're the top 1%. So when I get someone like this, like you, right, at a company like this, I have to ask these types of questions. So we find out, you know, what are these great companies doing?
No, absolutely. Yeah. And like, yeah, we spend a lot of time thinking about it. Like, yeah, just sort of providing different avenues for growth. And that's the one thing we have found about these types of development opportunities, right? There's no one size fits all. Different people are in different phases of their career and have different things that work for them to grow, right? Like a lot of people learn from their manager. That's key. But sometimes you learn from being partnered with a mentor from a different function within the company. Sometimes you learn from an external mentor. And I've had myself, like in my career, I've had different sort of mentors over time and different sort of growth opportunities over time. And sometimes there's the structured management training. We do that for new managers. Like, we make sure that they are equipped with all the tools that sort of like you need to succeed as a manager. And like, how do you give hard feedback? Like, some of these things. Like, and we extend some of these programs that are traditionally only for managers to also senior engineers and technical leaders. Like, for example, this session on how do you give critical feedback, right? Like, this is one of the hardest things, like, as a manager, like, how do you give constructive feedback in a way that's received well? So we do a session for managers, but we also included some of our tech leads and some senior engineers because ultimately, like, I mean, like, as you grow in your engineering career, irrespective of what track you're on, a lot of it is around building relationships, like working with people, leading teams, whether by influence or directly. And these are skills that are useful to you. That's actually one of the things I think, like, when I was early on as an engineer, and I see this sometimes with engineers early in their career, it's not immediately obvious how much what are traditionally called soft skills are important. I don't like the term because, like, it sounds like, oh, it's soft. Like, is that versus hard? Like, but those are super critical, right? Like, and in fact, we have a career ladder that emphasizes that. I mean, there's technical expertise, but there's collaboration, there's people leadership, and all of these collectively drive your impact, right? Like, and the more senior you are in your career and in along this ladder, the more some of these things play a role. And that's sort of important, I think, to early on recognize, like, because ultimately, like, collaboration, like, we are a team and you work most effectively when you're thinking of that versus just sort of individual technical excellence.
It's incredibly important because relationships are everything in life. And the only way you can move yourself, like you could be the greatest technical person in the world and you're not going to move forward if nobody likes you, if you can't work with other people, right?
So it ends up holding you back in many cases in your career at some point. And so that's why we have this sort of structured approach through these pillars in our ladder. And we talk to people like, hey, like you're doing great on this area, but like, here's some areas where you can continue to grow and develop.
No, it's become so much of a topic of conversation on the show that we ended up creating a company from it. So way we power our show is we have a leadership company. Mm. So here is the interesting part. So I didn't necessarily want to do it. People kept asking about it. They say, hey, we hear you on our commute, talk to these technology leaders about all of these things, you know, soft skills, communication, leadership, all of this stuff is so important. How do we get our people to learn that? And I said, I don't know. And then people kept asking. And so we ended up making a company and now we've grown into about 10 people. So I was very, very excited for life to take me in that direction, right?
No, yeah, you're exactly right. Like there's this famous quote, and I don't know if it's true or not, but like I heard it second and third hand. But like this guy called Bill Kurin, who was a senior vice president at Google. Like he was at some point my boss on paper, but I would hardly meet him. This is the days of Google where like you'd have a person with hundreds of reports and so on. But he's now in Sequoia, and he had this quote, which is like, technology is easy, people are hard, right? Like, and I think one thing you realize in the role of CTO and sort of as you grow into sort of engineering leadership, a lot of the things, a lot of your time and a lot of your mental bandwidth is spent around organizations, people, because ultimately this is how you get things done. Like technology problems. I mean, once you hire a great engineering team, the technology problems will get solved. Like you have really good people. It's all about making sure communication and all of this stuff works really well.
I love that quote. Who is that? Technology is easy, people are hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, like this was again, like second hand or third hand. So it was this guy called Bill Kurin. Okay. He's in Sequoia.
Sequoia Capital?
Yeah.
That's a good company. They're everywhere.
Yes. They're one of our investors too, by the way.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. The people and the leadership skills, it ended up being so incredibly important. You mentioned workshop. Have you ever attended that critical feedback workshop?
Yeah, I actually was one of the people who presented there.
Bring the value, my friend. Tell me, give me some tips on giving critical feedback.
Critical feedback. Yeah. So there's a few different things that I think like matter. Like I'll tell you one dimension, right? Like one dimension to it is when you give it, right? Like I like this, there's this example of like, let's say someone did something and then brought down the site and we're debugging and trying to get the site back up. That's not a great, great moment to like, hey, like let me give you some feedback, right? Like it's just the wrong time. And this is sort of an extreme example that drives the point home, but you have to figure out when is the right time. The other extreme of that is like 6 months later in some kind of a performance review, you're talking about, hey, like remember like 6 months back, like on that month, like in July, this happened, like that's too late. So you have to figure out like, I think like when is the right time to give feedback. Like usually it might be a one-on-one type of setting the next week or something like that. So one dimension to think about is like time, like when is the right time to give feedback? The other common sort of issue that happens with critical feedback is what's called the feedback sandwich, like where you're sandwiching critical feedback between good feedback, right? Like you're saying like, you're doing great, like everything's awesome, but something. And that's sometimes like, it can not work in a couple of different ways. One is you might dilute the impact of that feedback. The other one, it might not come across as authentic. And so I try to approach a feedback conversation very directly and like upfront. By the way, praise and recognition is super important. That's one of the things that I can sometimes people forget. And I think relevant, specific praise and recognition, we should do all the time. But when you want to deliver critical feedback, I think it's good to sort of set the stage and get into it. And then be very specific about what you've observed and the impact that that's had, and then what do you want to do about it? And it's like, these are subtle things, but like, it should not come across as sort of judgmental or about that person, but more about the behavior and the impact that that's had. And also good to leave that conversation with specific sort of action items. Okay, like, what do we change and how do we do that? One thing I also like to do is like, think of this as a conversation where you're partnering with them to solve the issue. Like, you are coming at it as helping them do it. And ideally, you've built a relationship of trust over a long period of time that helps you do this well. But I like the way of thinking about it, and I genuinely sort of think about it going into that conversation is like, hey, I want to partner with this person to make them successful, and going at it with that angle where you're like problem solving together rather than you being here and them being there and you're giving feedback and so on. Does that make sense?
You want to be consultative versus authoritative, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And I like what you're, first of all, I approve of the session. I love the points you hit with the consultation versus authoritative. I like that advice. And I like how you also address this build trust with them, because the great leaders and a lot of the advice is predicated on the fact that you are an influential leader in the sense that people follow you because they believe in you, not because of your title, yep. Right? That's a way different conversation to have. I really like that aspect of it. I like leaving the specific action items, because then it's less of a, we just sat down to talk about how I was doing poorly, and more about, we sat down to talk about how I can improve. And now I've shifted my focus to the exact items that'll get me where I want to be. And I would think the last part that I enjoyed was, like you said, setting the initial focus. If I say, hey, come over here, I want to, you know, praise you, I want to give you candy, and then you come over here and I give you a handful of broccoli and point out your flaws, you're not going to want to come back to my store anymore, right? You're going to actually dilute the trust with the individual by doing that. Yeah. But by saying, hey, there's this area I want to talk to you, I have some ideas, like, I might see a different perspective that you don't see. Let's discuss this. That sets the tone for the, I'm going to grow, I'm going to learn, I'm going to go into this thing. And it's like performance review, right? Like, I have to watch videos of myself speaking after I speak on stage when I go around giving my talk, so I can get better at public speaking.
Right.
I don't want to, but I do it. But no one's luring me in there to see a brand new hit movie and then showing me my speaker reel. Right, it's like I'm sitting down to do this speaker reel.
We have this sort of twice a year performance review process. I usually like nothing there to be a surprise, right? Like I tell my managers, don't wait for a performance review. Like, feedback should be continuous all the time and regular, both praise and sort of constructive feedback, right? Like, the thing that you get out of the performance review is, because we have this sort of 360 review process which I think a lot of companies have these days, but like, sort of, you get feedback from your peers, from cross-functional peers, other engineers that you work with, and that gives you a much more complete, and we share all of that feedback directly with everyone, like, and that gives you a more complete picture than sort of what your manager alone can give you. But nothing in a performance review should, I think, in an ideal world, come as a surprise to anyone. Like, you've been hearing this feedback all the time.
Are most of your engineers local, like on site in San Francisco, or are they mostly distributed?
No, it's mostly local. So we have, Thumbtack has a Salt Lake office, which is mainly ops oriented. We have a customer support team and other teams there. We've started to build a small engineering team there as a pilot. We have a few engineers there, but traditionally we have been 100% sort of local in San Francisco.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So you have like over 150 of them there in San Francisco.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm there like 4 or 5 times a year. What part are you in?
So we are in the same building as Twitter. So it's on Market Street. It's interesting, but like, this is sort of this, huge building where like we are on one floor, mm-hmm. but the floor is something like, I think, capacity for 1,000 people, right? Like, and it's
oh wow,
it's massive. It's like one block long, So we kind of get to sit together and sort of have the whole team.
That's pretty exciting, man.
And we have a good like cafeteria and culinary team, so everyone is well fed.
You got some food there.
Yes.
I'm on my way.
You should come and visit.
I visit, like I said, I visit probably four times a year. Right now I'm working on first of all, the podcast like exploded, right? Mm-hmm. And so now I get to travel all over the world, like Sweden, Germany, Amsterdam, the United States, all over. And so I'm giving this talk this year. I took the advice, some of the best pieces of advice from like CTO of NASA, Microsoft, Verizon, all these, you know, great engineering leaders that have been in the game for a long time. And I condensed it down into like 27-minute talk that I'm going around to conferences and sharing. So I'm talking with Yazir from Williams-Sonoma. Do you know Williams-Sonoma, the kitchen company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they're in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to him about coming out there and giving a talk to some of their engineers. And so if I'm out there, I'll hit you up and let you know.
That'd be awesome. That'd be
yeah. Great. Yeah. You seem like you have that culture because you have the new manager programs, you have the programs to lift the upper, you really care about growing your people and sharing that sort of, this is the information that's useful to move yourself forward. I like that style. You're in my tribe.
Yeah, no, I look forward to looking at your, is it on YouTube or something? I'd love to look.
Oh, yeah.
27 minutes. Yeah, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, we have Alex is our videographer. So we have this, we just kicked it off and, you know, a couple times in January. We're still in January, right? So I've given it a couple conferences in January so far. And so he took the footage from me doing that and turned it into a reel for the rest of the locations. So.
No, that's great because like, I mean, I think, yeah, people like, I think Kevin Scott, you had on your show before, like he's my sort of my boss's boss, like my previous boss's boss, like, and I've heard so many great things, but like these people are so busy and you don't have access to them. Right. Like, and it's great that you're able to get that thing out. And then also sort of condense what you've heard from a lot of these leaders into something that sort of any engineer can access and benefit from. So
You'd love to see the data too. Like we've got these deep spreadsheets. I know we love them. They're spreadsheets. They work great. And we tag our conversations. We tag, we have this thing called the Empire Clip Library where we take all the advice and we collected all of this information. Last year I did 230 interviews. Right. Mm-hmm. And we started, you know, cross-referencing them and talking with them and refining it. And then we did this data project. And we took the habits of the people that get to the top that are most common between all of them. Mm-hmm. And then I put those into the talk so that, and it's like, you get a little story and then you get a piece of tactical advice. So everything's like interesting story steps you can actually execute because I don't know, you go to a lot of conferences or no?
I used to, not recently. Yeah. I used to go to a lot of technical conferences. Yeah.
So I go here and there. But the thing that frustrates me about the talks is like just me personally, I don't know if it resonates with you. Mm-hmm. The stories are great, but I always want that tactical advice. Like I want to hear, here's a story, here's steps to replicate it. And it's usually just a bunch of story or a bunch of steps. And so I like it when they're merged. So I structured the talk like that. And I think that's why people have been liking it.
No, that's awesome. Because like, I think what you said, like resonated a lot. Like everyone has a story and sort of a path they took that's different. Right. Like, and for one thing, like that's what I think everyone should take away is like, I should craft my own path. But then it's great that you can sort of look across a lot of leaders with very different styles, very different paths. And like, hey, here are a few sort of attributes that stand out. And that's super helpful because like, an individual sort of tactical advice may or may not work for someone like, because like, yeah, it's like, it depends on the company, the stage and culture and all of this stuff. But when you're looking at a large cross section of people and like something stand out, those are likely to be very broadly applicable then.
Yes. And it's very helpful to know too, because doing that work now, like I know how to get to the next level. Like I know how to do that. I just copy the people who, you know, did it. I think at one of the talks in the Q&A, someone raised their hand and said, are you concerned about survivorship bias? And I was like, in your data? And that was actually the first time I had heard that word, but I did my best to reverse engineer what it meant. And I asked for clarity and they said, yeah, the fact that you're looking at only the great people. And I said, well, I'm not too concerned for two reasons. The first one is that we looked at all types of leaders. Mm-hmm. So, and then I just took what was common between the ones that got the farthest. Mm-hmm. I didn't only look at the ones that got the farthest, which would be the survivorship. Secondly, as just hearing about survivorship bias for the first time, I tend to still think it's a valid thing to do. Like if I have any options, my option is going to be to look at the most successful group of people and copy them. I don't think you can go wrong with that.
No, absolutely. And I what I've learned is I love biographies. I love just sort of reading about various people. I think it's important to realize like I have to find my own path. Like, may not be the exact same path as this other person because like people have different backgrounds and so on. But what is that one or two things like you said, tactics and things that they did at that right time that I can replicate in my career.
So any advice that you'd give real quick to CTOs that are growing their company, like right now Thumbtack is growing pretty well, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So in the time I've been here, like I think 2.5 to 3 years, approaching 3 years in April, we nearly tripled the team. So around 50, and now we are at 150 to 160, the broader team.
Yeah, that qualifies for hypergrowth. 20 to 30% is like what's considered, or 20 to 40% is hypergrowth. So advice to any CTOs going through that right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, and this is a challenge that people face, but more than a solution, but like...
That's okay.
The thing to keep in mind is... What are, like, as you're growing, things have to change, right? Like what worked at a certain size obviously doesn't work for the latest size, but you have to, I think one of the biggest challenges I've seen is like, how do I keep the best aspects of the culture that really work well for the company through this phase? And how do I evolve everything else, right? Like, and then the right steps and moments in time to do that. For example, like Thumbtack for a long time did not have a career ladder. We didn't have this sort of like, hey, here's sort of these levels and like, this is how you grow in a structured way in your career. And the reason for that when Thumbtack was small, we said, just focus on impact. Like just grow your impact. There's so much to do. There's like, you can take on more scope. There's no dearth of problems to solve. But what we found is like, as people get more tenured in the company, especially when you're very early in your career, you want a more structured sort of framework, right? Like to just observe your growth and then also understand like all the dimensions of growth and so on. And so at some point last year we rolled out this career ladder that was helpful, and so at like various times in as the organization grows, there are different needs that emerge and how you build the leadership team and so on. And I think just it's important to keep that in mind, and there are some aspects of the culture that we want to retain as long as we can, right? Like we have a very collaborative culture. Like we have this sort of value called make each other better. How do we retain that and like continue to find ways to make that happen even as the team grows, and just foster a culture of close collaboration between the various teams and parts of the product. So that's the biggest thing that comes to mind, just being aware of change and embracing change in a positive way as your organization grows, your technical stack grows. Growth's fun, but it's something you have to keep on top of all the time and try to think ahead in some ways, like not let it sort of creep up on you, right? Like just like with distributed systems, like you want to plan for like what's our traffic a year out, not next week, and not 5 years out, because that's sort of getting ahead of yourself. Like so that's the balance that I think is the biggest challenge.
I enjoyed that value, make each other better. Do you have like a quick 15-second talk on that?
Yeah, no, it's really about like, I think, recognizing that you growing and you helping other people grow and other people do better is just fundamental to how a company grows and gets through these phases of growth. Like when the company is growing, like you're adding on more users, like it's just becoming larger and larger. You're adding more people, but you also want to grow all of your people along with that, right? Like, and that's the best way that sort of your company can evolve well. And it's just fundamental to our culture. Like, and part of that is, I think, like sharing constructive feedback. And that's why we do this sort of session and so on, because like we actually encourage everyone to share. One of the things I love is like we do these 360 reviews, and you have, like, people spend a lot of time. Like, somebody just told me yesterday that they were writing peer reviews and they spent 1 hour for each peer review, right? Like, that's great. Like somebody felt like, hey, I'll dedicate a large chunk of my time to give feedback to others, like both positive and sort of constructive. And that's something like I really love about the Thumbtack culture. And I think everyone here loves that people are willing to spend that time and helping everyone grow.
I love it. That's a successful culture. Man, I've learned so much from you today. I love it. You got the cool name, RVP, right?
It's been great chatting with you, and I'm gonna look up some of your past podcasts, and I love absorbing information, and like I love like getting into one podcast and then like sort of spending on like next few weeks on that. So I'll probably do that with your podcast. Look up your talk too. Like, it's been great.
Yeah, you gotta make that train ride useful, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'd start with Microsoft, because you know Kevin Scott.
Yes, he's great. Yeah.
CTO of NASA.
Yeah.
You know, it says on LinkedIn that you know Prashant at Asana.
Yes, I think he's
the CTO of Asana.
Yeah. I see. You have him too.
Yeah. Ooh, awesome. Probably just for like at a event and we're like
probably, yeah. That's
right. He's in San Francisco. He's in your city.
Yeah.
So yeah. He was a great one. So Asana, Kevin Scott, NASA, that's more than enough to get you started. See if you see if you like it, want to binge a few more.
Absolutely. Binge watching the podcast. Yeah, I'll do
that. Yeah. And then of course the best one on the planet, RVP's episode.
Great. Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you so much. If I'm out in San Francisco, or next time I'm out in San Francisco, I'll put you on my travel alert spreadsheet. So ping you and you come by, say hello, try out some of that food you said you have over there.
That'll be great. It'll be great to have you.
Thank you so much. You have a fantastic afternoon, my friend.
Yeah, you too.
Talk soon.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to help, please take a moment right now to open up the iTunes app and leave a review of the podcast. If you take a screenshot of the review and text it or email it to a friend who needs to listen to the podcast and then CC me, joel@moderncto.io. If you CC me on the email, I'll send you a copy of the Modern CTO book or give you a shout out on the podcast, whichever you prefer. We're trying to get listed on the top 100 for iTunes, and I need your help in order to do this.